Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And John, we have a returning guest with us this week. This is not his second time on, this isn't his third time on. I believe this is his fourth time on our show.
Linder again?
No, not Brad. No, someone who actually has talent. I'm kidding.
Ooh.
I'm kidding.
That is not coming out of post-production.
It's one of our favorite independent writers who just, you know, apparently we've tricked him enough to come back on again. And of course, I'm talking about James Maddox. How are you doing, sir?
Doing fantastic.
How's life as a writer and bass player?
Oh my God. It's living the dream, you know? I mean, that's what it is. Yeah, I don't know, man. I've been going through some fun things, new stuff coming out, hopefully soonish, and, you know, playing bass. We're always on the road.
Yeah.
I find myself riding in the back of a van a lot, so that's kind of fun. Did I lose you?
No, I can hear you.
Okay.
Superhero speaking, technical difficulties. Yes.
Sorry, my mic actually got knocked out for a second.
That's what that bang was. Okay.
Yes. Let's get it caught up a little bit. I think the last couple of times you were on, you talked about Blue Nemesis and what was the other book you were here with Todd talking about?
Horror Show. Not too long ago, a couple months ago actually. We just collected the Horror Show into a single trade, and then we also collected The Dead into a single trade. And I've done a lot of like short stories that have come out, and then a few short stories that are actually going to be coming out here pretty soon that is going to be pretty fun. One of which, do you know the comic series 68 from Image?
No, I can't say I'm familiar with that one.
Okay, so that's basically, it started off as zombies happening during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, zombies in Nam, but they've gone on to do like a home front aspect, and, you know, it's basically the zombie plague based in 1968. And I got to talk to one of the creators of that book. And I was asked if I wanted to do a short story based in their world. So that should be coming out, I think, in February, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun. The story that I did for it. It's funny because, like, I do all this horror stuff. And I use the image and the thought, I guess, of zombies in a lot of my writing. But I've never actually sat down and wrote a zombie story.
Okay.
Because, I mean, like, you know, in the horror show, I'm not giving anything away. You see zombies within the first three or four pages, but they're not zombies. They're actors made to look like zombies. You know?
Right.
And, you know, similarly, The Dead is not a zombie book. I actually have that on a sign that I put on my table. Not a zombie book. So, yeah, to actually get to write a story with honest-to-God zombies in it, I was pretty stoked.
Cool. Did you, I guess you read their, you know, read their collected editions and took some inspiration from that, or?
Oh, yeah, I've been a big fan of 68 for years now. It's a super well-written story, but Mark gave me a lot of license to just kind of do what I thought was a good story. So I knew like the category or, you know, the genre they're working with and some of the themes and things like that. But for the most part, I was just told to do something fun. And I think I did.
So the story you wrote, does that take place now or is that during Vietnam?
It takes place in 1968, but it takes place on U.S. soil.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a horror writer, obviously, at all. But I'm kind of curious, having to write a horror story, a zombie story, in the midst of a war story on top of that to make it, you know, work, that seems like that would be fairly difficult.
Yes, because, well, here's the thing. I'm very bad at falling into research holes. So, 1968 was a very, very troubled time, and it was protests and it was movements and it was just a crazy moment in American history, mm-hmm. let alone world history. So I was able to incorporate, you know, the protests and just certain historical events into these, you know, short 8 pages that I had to work with. I don't know. The weird thing with me, like, it's my job first to entertain, you know, the reader.
Right.
But I feel that if I don't do my due diligence and if it's just like, you know, these guys shooting at each other and it's awesome. Yeah. Buy the book. Like, that's not fair to a reader. I want them to actually get that enjoyment that it's entertaining and it's fun, but then actually go back through it and look at the things that are on the walls or some of the phrases that the characters say, you know, that comes from something. You know, it's not just me, you know, completely making things up. It's actually based, especially when it deals with history, it's usually based in reality.
Well, geeks are never known for their nitpicking, so I don't know why you worry so much.
But no, it's funny, like this thing that I'm working with Jen Hickman, we're going to start this little, you know, short series that is just steeped in noir influence, you know? So like, and I went all out and I've read a lot of pulp fiction books and, you know, detective fiction, and I'm in love with the pinup art style that graced the cover of all the great pulp books that you've ever, you know, seen turned into movies or shows or whatever. And I've used all of that and just injected these three issues with just as much stuff from that world as I possibly can. And it's a lot of fun, as you know, I'm geeking out essentially in my writing.
Right. Actually though, kind of back up just a little bit, kind of brings up an interesting point. You know, you saying you can't just make everything up, which is true. I mean, they always say, if you're going to write what you know. Right. Obviously none of us have actually been through a zombie apocalypse. So, So you have to make up that part of it, but then, you know,
that's the part about fiction is taking that one big thing that you don't know, that speculative thing, and then backing it up with all your real world experiences. I listen to audiobooks a lot, and I'm re-listening right now to American Gods by Neil Gaiman.
Okay. And,
It goes through a typical narrative, but every once in a while, it'll have something in it, some just small detail where I'm like, that happened to him, you know,
right.
Like that thing that he just said in the story happened to him. And it's just, it's filled with moments like that, you know, cause he, you know, I guess he took a car trip, a cross country trip when he was in America to kind of help research this. And you can see it in the writing. And it makes it substantial, and it makes it something that you can connect with a little bit easier, because you could see yourself even going through those things. And they're small little details, but they connect you to the writer. The same thing with comics, especially, you know, when you put your experience and the thing that makes you into a script, it makes it better. I don't know. Maybe that's just kind of wishy-washy, but
no,
I think it makes it better.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's true. I think, I mean, my honest opinion, you take a piece like The Dark Knight Returns, obviously Frank Miller is not Batman nor Superman, but he definitely was taking the politics of the time and how he felt the world was, and he put a lot of himself into that book, and you can tell by reading it, and it's, you know, one of the things that makes it a good book. I don't know how the new one's going to be, but keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, I picked up the first one. I haven't sat down with it yet, but I'm hoping.
Yeah, the Master Race. Just the name scares me a little.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and two, like, just not to harp on this, because I know you said you haven't been watching it, and I know John kind of fell off the bandwagon, but I was watching Supergirl, and it was an example.
I've not fallen off the bandwagon. I just haven't gotten to my DVR yet.
Oh, okay.
But I finished Jessica Jones.
I haven't finished Jessica Jones yet. But with Supergirl, tonight they introduced Red Tornado. Okay. And it's probably a character a lot of people aren't that familiar with, which is fine. But, you know, in this version, you know, he was an android that was built by Dr. Morrow, which again is that does hold true in the origin. But in the show, the army shows up with this android and they want to test it by having Supergirl fight it. And Supergirl beats it up the first time she fights it, and all of a sudden it goes into preservation mode and flies off, and they're afraid it's going to kill everyone in the city. It's like, wait a minute, hold on. Like, that to me, that was just horrible writing. Like, really? Like, you created this android that if it gets beaten once, it goes and kills everybody? Like, there's obviously something missing here, you know? And then later they find out that the robot actually doesn't have artificial intelligence. It's been controlled by its creator the whole time. So they have to go after the creator to stop it. And again, too, and then it was like, yeah, how come nobody said, hey, wait a minute, this android's on a rampage. Where'd the creator go? So it's just like, it's stuff like that where, you know, like they didn't put a lot of thought into the detail. And like, as my experience, if I was working on something like that, they would be the things that would pop up in my head, you know, like, why did the robot do that? And then where'd the creator go after it went on the rampage? Like, why isn't he helping stop this thing? Like, that's just basic stuff that, you know, that's an example of bad writing.
Yeah, well, and you'll see a lot of that because they are wanting to amp up the energy, and you know that they might be working. I mean, there's a million excuses why bad things like that happen in TV shows and in comics too. I mean, there's a lot of I'm sure there's a lot of mainstream comics out there that you know, every once in a while the people behind it are just kind of phoning in the plot.
Yes.
That's kind of why I mainly stick to indie stuff, because, you know, unless it's something that's like not going to make it very far, they're not phoning in the plot on that. They're actually putting time and effort and thought into every issue that comes out, because they don't have the ability or the safety net of phoning it in. Now there's people that just don't have talent, you know, that they exist, but they're putting their whole effort into that story that they're doing. So that's kind of the downside with indie comics and small press comics. Like I absorb those books. And I've seen a lot of really good ones, and that's kind of the cool thing is that when you do find them, you know, you stick to them, you find those writers and you follow what they do.
Well, and on the bright side, even if you have to sift through a lot of bad stuff, the fact is that indie labels are giving a chance to people who would normally not be able to break into Marvel and DC to write good stuff that we would otherwise never have.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I don't know, like I've always been an advocate for the indie line. You know, I even if I wasn't a writer, even if I wasn't one of them trying to sell you that stuff, I would still be an advocate for the indies, because we can do whatever the hell we want. We don't have to answer to a publisher sometimes, or we don't have to make up things based on the politics of some bigger company or organization. We're doing what we want to do, because why the hell not?
Right, right. And also, you don't have the – you're not kind of, you know, pigeonholed into, well, if you're working for DC, you've got to write Batman or Superman or Flash or Green Arrow. You can't really create a new character and bring them in anymore, you know?
And that's horrible. It's a limiting practice, and, you know, you can only write the same story different ways so many times. But, you know, okay, here's an example from personal experience. Rob Dumo and I recently collaborated on a superhero comic called The Eccentrics or Eccentrics.
Yeah, I was just saying that.
And it is literally a stick man in a muscle suit superhero story. And he's had this idea for years, so since like high school, maybe middle school. And wanted to do this story because it meant a lot to him. And I've always wanted to write a superhero story just to see if I could do it. So we did it. And do you think that anybody in their right mind would green light a stick man in a muscle suit? But we did it and we put it out there. And so far we've gotten a lot of thumbs up for it. So it's cool. And we took a chance on something that was kind of kooky, kind of weird, and ran with it. And I'm happy that we did.
I just like the idea that what caught me about it, because I was going through the site before the interview, is it he's got this muscle bound superhero body, and then there's a baseball for a head.
I mean, it basically looks like a baseball. Yeah, it's weird, man. It was a weird concept. That's why I like working with artists in a collaborative sense, because I can come up with pretty decent plot points, but sometimes artists come up with the most off the wall things, you know?
True, true. Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't think I would have thought of a baseball for a head, but there you go.
And speaking of off the walls, I mean, once in a while you come across something like clown, which makes you think that you either want to give the creator a hug or have them institutionalized.
Clown had purpose. I mean, there was.
Oh, yeah.
There was tons of interpersonal stuff that went into clown, so hopefully it didn't label me as a basket case.
No, it's not basket case, it's avant-garde.
Ah, thank you.
Don't take too much stock into what John thinks anyway, because, you know, he's a little eccentric himself.
Oh, hell, I don't even listen to myself.
Yeah. That is true.
Clown was, again, something that I had a really fun idea for, and Brandon kind of brought his own flavor to the setting and to the world. I don't know. That's, again, why I love comics. Collaboration is king, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. No, that's true. I mean, and it's also, I think, a much different collaboration than, let's say, people working on a television show, you know, because number one, you can do it with two guys, you know, and it is always, it does, I mean, when it's done right, it does always seem like a collaboration where the writer goes, well, here's my idea, and then the artist brings it to life and then adds their own you know, flair to it, their own level. Yeah. Where a lot of times, sometimes, you know, in a movie, the director's like, this is my vision, you know, and I want it to look exactly like my vision, you know, and we end up with the prequels for Star Wars. So, you know, so collaborations are good.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I guess it has to happen, but I can't imagine walking into a room and just being like, this is the way it's going to be.
No, definitely not. You know, I think the secret, a lot of successful people will tell you their secret to success is they surrounded themselves with talented people, you know, and let them do the work, and then they took the credit for it. So, so tell me a little bit about this. You said you were doing a noir book.
Yeah, we haven't landed on a title for it, but all the issues are written. Jen and I just sat down and went back and forth for about an hour and a half on changes that need to be made before we actually start production.
Okay.
She's turned over some really great character designs, so I'm pretty stoked about that. But yeah, and getting to work with Jen is just, it's the greatest, you know.
And is it a straight up detective story, or does it have a horror flair to it?
Yeah, it's it basically follows a cop, a criminal, and a serial killer.
Oh, okay.
That's the beginning of a joke, right?
Yeah. They all walk into a bar. but yeah, so the details of it are just, I don't know. I don't know what I should talk about, especially this early on in the production phase.
Right.
But it's not going to be supernatural at all. It's going to be straight up real. And then I'm pitching so many books right now. Like I've worked on a number of different pitches and, have either sent them out or will be sending them out fairly soon. But I think that one and another book are just the ones that I'm working on right now. We're trying to get the collected set of The Dead up for Comixology within the next month, hopefully by Christmas. Hmm. But, we do have the book itself, like the physical trade paperback. You can buy it on my website or on The Dead's website.
Cool. And, just for those who aren't familiar, like when you do a collected series, usually how many issues is that?
For The Dead, it was all six. So it was 194 pages, this book was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was six issues, 24 pages each issue. And then we had, I think, like 50 pages of extra content. Yeah, we had... It was actually, like, I'm really, really proud of the book itself, besides the story, because the story, you know, is great and everything. But the extra stuff, we've got variant covers by, you know, artists like Jorge Corona and Sarah Richards. And I came up with, for you not familiar with the concept of The Dead, is basically you die and you wake up and there's a bunch of rooms that's been made by people who have died and woken up in the same location, and you create your own afterlife, basically, but your afterlife's connected to somebody else's and yada, yada, yada. So it's essentially an infinite premise, infinite setting type story. So I got in touch with a lot of my artist friends and I was like, I don't need a pinup from you. I just need a single panel, right? Mm-hmm. And I wrote out all of these panels that were basically different rooms, and each artist read that list and chose a panel and then just gave me a panel, and we collected them in a little extra content to show what else is going on in this world, you know? So there's just a lot of world building. I love world building, man.
Cool. And do you anything special in the collected editions besides the world building? Like, do you maybe include your original script or through director commentary?
I for the extra content outside of that, I wrote an 8-page short story that adds on to another character that you see briefly in the story, in the main story. I don't usually include a lot of script work. I did for the horror show. I don't know. It's funny because I'll go back and read my scripts and be like, oh yeah, that was an interesting turn of phrase I used there, but you know, it's on the page. I don't know if anybody actually wants to sit down and read my scripts.
I don't know. You might be surprised.
I might be.
You know, I always thought it was cool when, and I don't normally go out and buy special editions, but when they did Civil War, they came out with the director's cut of the first issue, and it had Mark Miller's actual script in the back, you know. And it was just interesting to read through the script and see what little changes were made in the actual book, you know, as opposed to what he wrote.
Right. That's true. I never really thought about it in that sense, I guess. It would be kind of fun to go back and peek at what was maybe in the writer's wording versus what the artist interpreted from that. That'd be kind of fun.
See?
Ah.
There you go.
I did a Platinum Edition. I did a lot of reading of scripts when I first got into comics because, I mean, I didn't know. I had a general idea of what a script was, but I wanted to be professional, you know? Mm. So I went and downloaded a bunch of scripts and checked out some stuff. And I was at a con a couple of years ago and picked up a script from James Tynan, who was, I guess, I mean, he's done a lot of amazing books. Mm-hmm. But the one that I picked up was a Batman Eternal script. And I picked up one from Gail Simone. I could see, I guess, where scripts would be a valuable commodity.
Cool. What was the Gail Simone script?
It was for Tomb Raider.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I guess it's writers like that. You know, I sat down with an Alan Moore script once And that was fun. Because it read like just a novel at some points and a recipe book at some points.
I bet.
But, you know, it's the way that I do a lot of my scripting. It's very informal, but I make sure to add as many influential bits as I can just to be like, oh, just in case you were wondering, this particular scene was inspired by this book and you can read a passage of it from here. Here's the link, you know, which
right.
probably that never gets seen or that never, you know, like people are like, oh yeah, that's great, man. And then just keep on with their day.
Right. Well, actually that actually brings up an interesting point. You had said when you first started, you just read a lot of scripts because you wanted to be professional. We'll put that in quotes.
Yeah.
Did it change how you put your scripts together when you read scripts from a bunch of different writers? Did you find that they all followed the same similar pattern, or did you kind of just like went and did your own thing anyway?
Well, honestly, the reading of the scripts wasn't for content as much as it was for formatting.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in how they basically laid out, you know, where the indications for captions were the indications for panel description, you know, that kind of stuff. So as far as the writing, like the actual words on the script, no, like I did my own thing. I've always done my own thing, but I was always curious. Like I didn't do it at the beginning, but, so many different writers do number their word balloons and their captions. You know, so when you turn it over to a letterer, they can make heads or tails of if it's just one big balloon or if it's two that are connected or if they're separated out. And I adopted that method really quickly. There have been a lot of things that I've seen in a lot of people's scripts that they do as far as formatting goes that I don't do. So that was kind of like that's not needed. So I'll do something that I thought would be better suited to making it clear and on the thing. But scripting, like I said, it was more just to see. So I didn't turn something over to an editor for them to read and then be like, you know, he's way out of the loop on what a script's supposed to look like. But the funny thing is all the scripts that I've ever picked up, most of them are completely different from each other. So there's no set way of doing it, especially in comics. In film and in TV, the ones that I've looked at have been fairly well the same, you know? But in comics, it's just like a free-for-all, like nobody, you know, because most of the time you're doing it with a collaborator anyway, or at least someone that you've been paired up with. And any questions you have on a script, you just go back and forth and talk about it.
Right, right. And that's actually kind of, yeah, that's what I was getting at with the question. And I kind of think that's important for people who are thinking about doing this, or getting started, like to hear kind of like, just do it. You know, you don't have to worry so much about the format of the script as just write a good story and then find a good collaborator.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was on a panel at some point at some con, and it was like, how do you get into comics? You know? And my first answer was just don't. Just don't. Go be a lawyer, go do something that'll make you money. Like go do something else. But the honest answer was just do it. Like you're going to mess up so much and you're going to write it. It's going to be horrible and you're going to hate yourself, but the next one will be better. Not very good, but a little bit better. And then eventually you'll turn over something that you'll be happy to show people.
It goes for just about any type of writing, you know, whether you're doing script or novel or whatever. It is definitely a process to try and get into it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I mean, you can wait around for the golden opportunity to hit, but I don't know.
And I've heard it over and over again, and it goes with what you're saying. I mean, you said it, you're going to fail. You're going to write something that reads like crap, even to, you know, your mom, who is like law bound to say it's great. So so you can't, the one thing that, that I've seen is you can't be discouraged. If you really want to do it, if you really think you've got a story, you have to keep trying.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, even if you don't have a story, just create something. Like, I've seen one of the bigger problems that I've seen pop up in comics, and I guess any kind of storytelling really, is the story. You know, like you have the thing that's your baby or whatever the hell you want to call it, that thing that you're not going to let go or you're not going to compromise on. You know, the vision, the walking in with the vision. That's just another story. You know, like the dead, the horror show, clown, Centrix, like all these things. I'm really proud of them. I think we're doing some really good stuff, but I'm super jazzed about this new book I got that I'm working on. And then when it's out, I'll be super jazzed about the next thing, you know? Like you can't put all your chips on that one story and hope that that's going to be it, you know?
But right. Being super jazzed about something, I gotta say that probably helps the creative juices get flowing, right? I mean,
oh, but I'm super jazzed about everything that I do. here's the way it works, people. You get an idea, and it's the greatest thing that any human has ever come up with on the face of the planet. And then about a month after you've finished, or maybe even a month into it as you're writing it, that newness starts to fade away and you're like, I'm a horrible person. Nothing I do makes any sense or matters. And I should just stop where I'm at. This is the creative process. But that newness, like every time I come up with a new concept and I start working on it, oh my God, it's the most blissful I've ever been or will ever be. And then it turns into something because you don't reach all the goals. You don't hit all the points that you hope to. I don't know.
I believe John was snickering at that because that's what's going on in his head every day. And to back up a little bit to what John said, I don't know why I'm ringing this up, but it flashed into my head when he said your mother's always law. What did you say?
Law bound or whatever.
Law bound. I don't know. Law bound to say it's good. I'll never forget, and I don't know why I'm sharing this, but I want to share this with the audience. I was a sophomore in high school, and you know, English class doing poetry, and my English teacher really liked the stuff I wrote. She was encouraging me to write, you know, and she said, "Oh, if try long form. If you have any ideas, you know, try writing a story, you know." And this is, you know, so I was a sophomore in high school. So this is 1991. So I don't have a PC at home to type on. I have a pen and paper, and I just wrote, like, I had an idea for a story, and I wrote the first couple paragraphs down, and I just wanted somebody to look at it. Like, should I continue on with this, or should I, like, just forget it and move away, you know? And I showed it to my father. And I, you know, loved my father up and, you know, wholeheartedly until, you know, I mean, I still love my father, but, you know, he's been gone for 5 years. But I showed it to him and he read it and he looks at me and he goes, you know, maybe you should have a spell checker. And I'm like, okay, I understand there's a couple misspelled words, but what do you think of it? Oh, you know, just get a dictionary out. Like, like he couldn't get past a couple some misspelled words. It's like, wait a minute. I'm asking you about the content, not the format. Yeah. So like, I never really wanted to show my parents anything ever again that I created.
And that's the kind of thing you have to get over.
Yes. And there's also a little bit of insight to how I think. So anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's really fun. Like I do have a set number or a set, you know, group of readers that I've gone through a lot. There have been a lot of friends that will read and just kind of harp on the wrong thing, you know? But definitely the grammar thing has popped up with one or two. And that's the last thing you need to worry about.
Right.
Right.
Yes. Like it, like, because I'm missing a comma there. Does it change how you feel about this story in general?
And some people does.
Yeah, I know. One of those people missed our isn't on tonight because he was busy with his kids. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that out loud? Ben, we love you.
So what? How many projects are you normally working on at the same time?
Well, when I'm on fire, like when I just a couple of months ago, I was involved with 5 or 6, but with the holidays coming up and everything, I've been cutting back a little bit. So right now I finished a ton of short stories. I've got 2 anthology shorts coming out, and then 2 backstory, you know, like stories that are going to be included in some issues of some other comics. So once those are pretty well put together, like fast. Here's the thing. I've been working on this one story. It's not the one that I'm doing with Jen. It's actually just in the pitch creation stage right now, and I'm pitching it out to some publishers, and we're going to see if it takes off. But I've been devoting so much of my time to this story because I want it to be perfect, because I write a lot of entertaining stuff. But a lot of it is just kind of to get an idea out there, or, you know, to have something that I think is, it adds to the genre that I'm working in. But for this one, it's tackling a subject that I kind of care about deeply. So, it's really funny. I've always written really fast, and I've always written these kind of stories that I can push it out. You know, it's a crime story, or it's a horror story, or it's a supernatural tale, and I love writing them so much that I can work on them really fast. And I always wondered, you know, at what point would I stop and devote a lot of my energy to one book? And I think I've found it right now. So even if it doesn't get picked up, which I'm waiting, you know, to hear back, it's going to be made. But I would like to have a little bit more distribution power behind it.
Hmm. Cool.
And you have to let us know when that comes out and where to get it.
Sure, absolutely, man.
A subject you really care about. Is it 14th century tapestries? Is that, you're writing a whole book about that?
You've been reading my blogs, haven't you?
Yes.
The tassels have to be described in just the right way, you know?
Oh God, that's like writing ship novels that take places on ships.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you get fore and aft mixed up, or
dick. Okay, it was kind of fun, but not really.
Yeah. No,
the weird thing that comes about taking on new uncharted territory for me is that you have to read and explore and find all these details that I normally have on hand. Like I said, I've seen so many horror movies and shows and read so many horror books. Like, horror is ingrained into my being, you know? And I can usually do a really decent job at commenting on the horror genre via a story. Political stuff I'm a little newer at, so I'm like steeping myself in just anything that I can get a hold of right now.
I see.
Yeah, because you don't want to mess up with stuff like that, you know.
Yeah,
you'll look a little silly.
I know, and it's hard to write a novel that talks about the glories and wonders of Donald Trump and make him sound like a superhero. It's tough. I know, it takes a lot of research.
Okay. Let's not get me on rants, okay?
I think that would be well received here.
I'm seeing a lot of really good books come out right now, and it makes me happy because it shows that the publishers that I kind of admire are doing even better stuff than they were 2 years ago, you know? Boom Studios is doing amazing work right now. Vertigo looks like they're going to come out with a killer lineup in the very near future. You know, even Black Mask is just kicking major amounts of ass right now. And I see all these books come out through all these publishers, and it reminds me, you know, a lot of the stories remind me of a good time when I started reading comics, you know, seriously, that turned into, you know, Transmetropolitan and turned into the Sandman and turned into all these really good books that I still go back and read today, you know?
Wow, the Sandman.
And Transmetropolitan. Yeah, I actually remember that one.
The Transmetropolitan is the thing that I will geek out on the most. You give me the chance.
How about the Walking Dead? Do you read the book?
I've read maybe the first two volumes of it.
Okay.
And I've watched the first season, I think, of the show. So I haven't actually sat down with that one.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things, I think, that by the time I finally came around to it, it was already like maybe 5, 6, 7 volumes in. And I was like, ah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. So here, I'm going to ask a question because you're a huge horror fan. I'm a semi horror fan. I enjoy a lot of the movies from the 80s and a lot of Stephen King books. But I've kind of always felt, and I know I'm in the minority here when it comes to The Walking Dead, but I always kind of felt like, how long can it really go on?
That's the thing. From what I understand about it and what I've, you know, the limited exposure that I've had to The Walking Dead is that it's not necessarily a zombie book in the sense that that's all that it is. Like, Kirkman is make characters. And those characters are what you care about. It's just the zombie bit is just the backdrop, you know? And so what happens is you can put these people, I mean, all of a sudden they could all be like on a colony in Mars. And if it's the same character, you're still going to roll with it because you want to see what that character is going to do now that they're on Mars. Holy crap, you know?
Right.
So I think that Kirkman especially, because I read Thief of Thieves and really dug that. And he's got a way of producing characters. Rob always tries to get me to read Invincible because I read the first volume of that and it was really good because of the characters that he creates. It's the same thing with Stephen King. Stephen King writes these like really relatable, really, you know, quick and catchy characters that you instantly fall in love with, and that's why he is the best. You know, Stephen King is the greatest selling author of all time, you know?
Right.
And that's largely not just because he comes up with really good plot scenarios, but all those plot scenarios are just backdrop for these characters that you care about. So as far as The Walking Dead goes, I mean, I'm sure he's got plenty of ideas on directions to go, but that comes with the mindset of just do it, you know, like get it out there, take them in directions. If it doesn't work, steer it into a direction that it does work.
Right. Now, I always think, like, because obviously logic dictates there's only one way the story can end. You know, everyone's dead, everyone's a zombie, unless I find a cure, which it doesn't look like they're planning to ever do anytime soon. And I always think of movies like the ultimate ending is not movies. The movies, every movie that has been made of this short story has been horrible. But I Am Legend, you know, where it basically ends with I can't think of the character's name, but our hero captured by these vampire people, and he knows it's over, you know, and he basically just says like, I'm the last human being, so I am a legend because that's it. It's done. You know, game over. And it's like, that is the ultimate ending of these apocalyptic
stories. Not. I mean, it is for, I guess, humanity. And you might want to put a spoiler warning on this whole conversation regarding I'm Legend. But he looks out the window and he sees the fear in the vampire creature's eyes when they look up in his window and they see him staring back. Like, they're like, I mean, it's essentially, if the boogeyman was trapped in a room and looking out at you, you would be freaked out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he is the monster now. He's no longer the person in the, you know, he's the person in the minority. He is that boogeyman that's underneath all their beds and in their closets. He can jump out and stake them, and they'll be telling their kids about that for time, you know, in memoriam. So essentially, his story is done, but the greater civilization, we could end that chapter and then start with a different character from the point of view of one of those people looking up at him, and the story continues.
Yeah. And not every Not every movie's been bad on that. Like if you ever get to see The Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price,
really good. Yeah. I was stoked on that one. Man, I was so bummed out that Will Smith movie hit, and like leading up to it, I was like, they're gonna do it. They're gonna make an I Am Legend movie that is gonna be great. I can feel it in my bones. And then I went and saw it, and I wanted to just burn everything to the ground. I Am Legend is one of those books that I read way early on, and it got me in love with Richard Matheson. But yeah, and I go back and the Omega Man. Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Well, I think part of the problem is there is a fear for people who make movies to you know, if you're going to do that right, you're going to have, and let's say you get an hour and a half movie out of it, you're going to have an hour of just him, yeah. You know, you're just the main character walking around exploring the world completely alone, nothing going on, you know, and that's because the story was trying to set that image in your head, you know, and then of course you bring the zombies in or the vampires in at night a little bit here and there. But yeah, and that's, you know, they've been afraid to pull that trigger for a long time. But I mean, maybe now with the success of Walking Dead, they won't be afraid to do it again. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just a disappointing thing to see a book that really inspired and influenced a lot of your work to go misunderstood for so long.
You know, and I actually was going to say that too. I read that story a long time ago, and then I read it again maybe about 6 years ago, and I had kind of walked away from it both times with the same impression. But you just, you know, made me see it in a slightly different way, you know, and that's what it takes, is a good writer to be able to say, hey, no, this is what the story's really saying. So yeah. I appreciate that.
I mean, that's just all the way. That's the ways that I've always seen it. You know, that is what every filmmaker has missed, is that human moment where he realizes, where they all see him as this horror, you know, that's it. And they always get it wrong. And I don't understand why, because it's such a potent moment. That's such a real moment that, you know, you look at what you've done in your life and realize that the thing that you thought you were, you're not anymore, you know?
Right, right. Well, at least we got a billboard for Batman, Superman.
That's right, yeah.
Way before we ever actually got the movie. what was I going to say? So, wow, we're getting close to an hour.
That's what happens when you let me rant.
I know. We should have you on all the time to rant.
Huh. You know, it's my gears.
So you have the short story for 68 coming out. You have a noir story anthology coming out. What's the next thing that will definitely be out that people should take a look for?
The next thing that will definitely be out,
besides buy, everyone that's listening should go and buy the collected edition of The Horror Show right now. But after that, what's the next thing?
The only thing that's going to be coming up really soon is a steampunk fantasy kind of. Okay, essentially the idea of this is steampunk and fantasy went to war, and steampunk won. And then 50 years later, you get to see like the prejudices and the way that they're kind of like reintegrating society again. Based on the rule of steampunk. So that's a short story that will be hitting pretty soon. We've been putting out ash cans of it just to get a general consensus from readers, and so far people kind of dig it. And then the next thing that we're going to be releasing a little bit more widely is a story called Arkham Pulp, which is essentially a Lovecraftian heist. Yeah. So Michael Mayne and I worked on that one, and it is pretty much done and ready to roll.
Cool.
Cool.
So that first one's going to start a few fights in Hot Topic.
Yeah.
I was about to ask. So fantasy versus steampunk. Steampunk wins. This sounds like it could be inspired by going to any Comic-Con.
Yeah.
You can have your Star Wars versus Star Trek. You can have your steampunk versus fantasy.
Yeah. So Rob Dumo did the art on this, but the idea was written by myself and a guy named Dan Mosier. And we were at a comic convention and just happened to be sat next to each other. We didn't know each other before this show at Baltimore. And we got to talking about, you know, what would be cool, what would be a cool story. And we got riffing on this idea of, you know, there's a fantasy aspect and there's steampunk and they start warring and steampunk wins and they try to eradicate as much, you know, magic as they can. But there are still these little pockets of resistance, and it's weird, man, that it flew out in that weekend just so easily. And then we started writing it directly after, and it was definitely fueled by comic conventions.
Dan Mosier, no relation to Scott Mosier, right?
No, I don't think so. At least, I mean, anything's possible. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, and it's funny. I don't know if I've asked you this before. Do you have you ever read any of Jim Butcher's books?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It just seems like a story fitting for him because he's best known, obviously, for his series The Dresden Files, which is urban fantasy. It's a noir detective story where the main character is a wizard. And his new series that just came out is a steampunk-inspired series. So, you know, fantasy versus steampunk. And it's upsetting because, you know, it's holding off the next issue of The Dresden Files.
Don't you hate when that happens, man?
Yeah. You know, in this case, fantasy should have won. Yeah. Cool. All right. Let's see. Oh, I guess, you know, anything else you want people to take a look for? And, of course, I guess, you know, as always, where can people find you online?
So I am jamesmaddox.net. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all those social things. unless you see me at a convention, most of my stuff is up on Comixology. But if you really dig it, you can get in touch with me and I'll figure a way to get you a print copy. It's a lot of fun. And then, I'm, you know, always doing work with Broken Icon Comics. And if you happen to be in the Huntington, West Virginia area, we have a fantastic show called Tricon that you should definitely check out.
Oh, that's right. That's coming up again.
Yeah, it'll be happening next year in June.
Oh, okay.
Which we are going to have a killer lineup. We're bringing in David Finch and Ed Brisson and Kyle Strom and just a bunch of really great people.
You should have us there to do a panel.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, we could moderate a panel or two. How's that?
Yeah, we've got lots of things happening, and I love our panels, even though I don't get to see them because I'm usually running around on the floor trying to put out fires.
Yes.
But Eric and I, you know, so far this is going to be our fifth year, and we've so far put on a really good show each and every year.
Cool. Besides Tricon, are you going to be at any conventions coming up?
Yes. I'm definitely going to be at Emerald City Comic Con. I do Baltimore pretty much every year. Probably Cincy Comic Con. I don't know. I got to get my schedule ready for next year. Because if a few things hit the way I hope they hit, I'm going to have to do a ton more conventions because I want to be in like full on promotion mode for those.
All right. Maybe Philly or New York Comic Con?
Yeah, I usually get to New York Comic Con every year. This past year I didn't go, and it was the first time I didn't. And I was like okay with it. I was fine, you know? And I started seeing the pictures pour in, and I was just like, I'm an idiot. Why didn't I go?
They showed the premiere episode of Supergirl. They showed the, if I remember correctly, it was like the premiere of, or the current episode of Flash before it aired on TV. Mm-hmm. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and a couple other shows. Like, all of these, like, really great panels, and I missed them all as well because I was busy in Artist Alley, so.
Yeah, that's good. At least you're in Artist Alley.
Yeah, sometimes it's good. But yeah, no, so, yeah, I think that's a good place to put in a pin in it for this week.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Not a problem. And actually,
yeah, anytime.
Before we sign off, I want to just real quick. So we always sign off the podcast by saying, don't let your cape get caught in the door. And our co-host, Ben, who isn't here this week, we actually just did a print interview with Nicole Kane, who's an independent creator from Australia. And she has a book out called Seamstress, which is really cool. It's a story about twin sisters. One is good, one is evil. And they're both seamstresses, and they create costumes for the heroes or the villains, depending on which sister you're talking to. Cool. And when we put, I put the questions together, and of course, Ben went and fixed them up for me. He corrected all my spelling and grammar. But he added a couple questions, changed a couple things around. But there's something he did, and I never thought of it this way before, and I'm really glad he did. So he said, in one of the questions, don't let your cape, our motto is kind of don't let your cape get caught in the door, which basically means don't let your own foibles, insecurities, or hangups get in your way of your own success in life. And it was like, wow, I never thought of it that way before, but that's true. That is like one of the things we promote in the show. Like, you want to be creative, just go out and do it. Don't let the voices in your head stop you and those kinds of things. And so for those who haven't read it, you should check out the interview. It's on our website. But yes, again, you know, so as we said it tonight, we said it all the time. If you want to create something, just go out and create it. So I'll say this with pride now, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn. Okay, what are you doing? Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh. Well, there are better ways to join the conversation. Really? Like what? Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest. Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google+? I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book videos, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list. Cool! Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic?
Nope, I'm going to try to answer the Stump the Key question.
Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl?
That's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. My favorite lies!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's gonna get caught in the door.